We've been against the war from the beginning because we are against bloodshed. We know that the bloodshed and the terrible assault on Gaza, apart from being in itself criminal and deadly by definition, it won't bring security to no one, especially not to the Israelis. We want the bloodshed to stop. We want the war to end for the sake of lives of Palestinians and Israelis alike.
Ofer Kassif.
Thousands of Palestinians, just one sentence, please. It's not only the mass, they make so many Palestinians, thousands of Palestinians who are killed. Israeli soldiers are killed. The hostages are at risk because the government doesn't do anything.
We have to leave it there
them.
Because our show is ending. Ofer Kassif, Jewish member of the Israeli Knesset facing expulsion. That does it for our show. A deeply fond farewell to our video fellow, Sanji Lopez. You will remain in our hearts and our DNA, Democracy Now! Alumni. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining
us. You are tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hey, KBOO listeners. KBOO cut through the clouds during our end-of-year campaign thanks to support from listeners like you. When we meet our campaign goals, we can continue to bring you colorful, radiant rays of radio. Thank you, and keep tuning in for unique music, cutting-edge news, and transformative public affairs on the airwaves.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of An Oregon Story, saving our beaches, farmland, and more. Screening from January 17th through January 31st across multiple venues in Portland and beyond. This film documents the history of Oregon's efforts to protect its coastline and save its farmland from urban sprawl. The documentary features archival footage and interviews with the individuals who helped create Oregon's land use planning program and defended it for the past 50 years. Again, that's a documentary film screening of An Oregon Story, Saving Our Beaches, Farmland, and More, from January 17th through January 31st across multiple venues in Portland and beyond. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Support for the KBOO Evening News comes from KBOO members and Lori Sonnenfeld Realty, helping people buy or sell a home or duplex in the greater Portland area for the past 35 years. More information at CascadiaHomes.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland Metro Counties will open warming shelters tonight to bring people in from the cold in the face of a winter storm. Portland firefighters are investigating a suspected car arson outside Commissioner Renee Gonzalez's house. And a Pentagon watchdog says $1 billion in Ukraine weapons has gone missing. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 12th, 2024. I'm Josh Salem. Western Oregon faces a winter storm warning this weekend, with temperatures dropping fast on Friday afternoon. On Saturday, much of the state will be facing snow and strong winds, with potential blizzard conditions in the gorge. Counties in the Portland metro area are opening warming shelters tonight, at least through the night of January 13th. In Multnomah County, there are six sites that open at 8 p.m. tonight. Salvation Army is located at 5325 North Williams Avenue in Portland. Cook Plaza is located at 19421 Southeast Stark Street in Gresham. Friendly House is located at 1737 Northwest 26th Avenue in Portland. Ascension Catholic Church is located at 743 Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland. That site is operated by Multnomah County. Powell Shelter is located at 7332 Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland. Market Street Shelter is the sixth shelter that's open tonight at 120 Southeast Market Street in Portland. All of these sites are ADA accessible and pets are welcome. The county stresses that no one will be turned away from these sites in the cold weather. Multnomah County Chair Jessica Vega Peterson declared a state of emergency for the county starting at 5 p.m. Friday through noon on Tuesday. Peterson said of the shelters, quote, "No one will be turned away. We encourage people to come in from the storm. Temperatures are going to dip well below freezing and will likely stay that way. Frostbite in these temperatures could set in less than an hour. Seek shelter as soon as possible," end quote. County leaders say they're prepared to open more warm shelter spaces and beds this weekend if need be. Residents can call 211 or check online at mulco.us/cold for the latest information. 211 can also help people get transportation to these shelters, and TriMet allows for free rides to warming shelters. 211 can also help direct folks to warming shelters in Clackamas, Washington, and Clark counties as well. If shelter residents are concerned about someone they see out in the cold, they are advised to call the non-emergency response line and request a welfare check. That number is 503-823-3333. For Oregon and Southwest Washington drivers on their evening commute on Friday, black ice is a concern. The road is wet, and the temperature is dropping below freezing, so drivers are advised to take extra caution. The far right says release of January 6th video is being slow-rolled. Some Republicans reject former President Trump's calling insurrectionists hostages. And a Pentagon watchdog says more than $1 billion in Ukrainian weapons have gone missing. With more on these stories, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We don't want them to be retaliated against and to be charged by the DOJ and to have other, you know, concerns and problems.
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson says they're blurring faces in January 6th Capitol security footage. Only 5% of 44,000 hours of video is now public, 2 months after Johnson promised to release it all. That's angering his right flank, who say the footage will exonerate former President Donald Trump and the rioters. Meanwhile, a growing number of Senate Republicans are balking at Trump, calling those convicted of January 6th crimes hostages. Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina says they're not political prisoners.
I was here, and I saw maybe a few tourists, a few people who got caught up in things, but when you see police barricades breached, when you see police officers assaulted...
But more House Republicans are following the lead of Trump ally New York's Elise Stefanik. She claims the Biden administration is mistreating American patriots.
I believe that we're seeing the weaponization of the federal government against not just President Trump, but we're seeing it against conservatives.
Trump is promising if elected, he'll pardon many of the 450 sentenced to prison so far. A Pentagon audit finds more than $1 billion in weapons and gear sent to Ukraine are unaccounted for. That undermines Biden administration efforts to get the Republican-led House to agree to more aid to help counter the Russian invasion. But Air Force Major General Patrick Ryder says there's no evidence the weapons were stolen.
We do see some instances of Russia continuing to spread disinformation to the contrary.
Meanwhile, the Defense Department says it'll investigate the mishandling of Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's hospitalization, which he and others kept secret from the White House for days. Calls for Austin's resignation are growing on Capitol Hill, but Democratic House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says Austin has his support.
I do look forward to being briefed by the administration in terms of protocols that they may put in place moving forward.
Observers say former Maryland Governor Larry Hogan could be preparing a presidential run on the no-labels ticket. In what many call a necessary first step, the moderate Republican has just resigned as the group's co-chair.
I believe that we can actually win the race. We have a strong ticket that those two major candidates are weak. We might have to try to pull off something that's never been done.
No Labels has secured ballot access in 13 states. Democrats and other Trump critics fear a third party candidate could pull votes from President Joe Biden and help reelect Trump. And closing arguments have finished in the punishment phase of the former president's civil fraud trial. The judge has already ruled that Trump and his family constantly falsified financial records, and the New York Attorney General is asking the Trump Organization be fined nearly $370 million and be barred from real estate business there. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Portland Fire Department is investigating a possible arson case outside of City Commissioner Rene Gonzalez's home. Early Friday morning, firefighters got a call about a car on fire in the Eastmoreland neighborhood of Portland. The car was parked, no one was in it, and no one was injured. Investigators say information at the scene of the fire suggested it was intentionally set. They later found out that the car belonged to a family member of Commissioner Gonzalez. No arrests have been made. Multnomah County District Attorney Mike Schmidt released a statement following the news of the suspected arson. He said, quote, "Acts of political violence and acts of political vandalism are unacceptable and will not be tolerated. Commissioner Gonzalez and everyone else in a public leadership role is here to serve this community because they love this community," end quote. He continued, quote, "Everybody is free to agree or disagree with me, the commissioner, or any public servant or political candidate. But threats, vandalism, arson, violence, or any other form of illegal coercion will not be tolerated. If confirmed arson, we will find and prosecute those responsible for this act to the fullest extent of the law," end quote. The Portland Fire Investigations Unit is investigating the car fire. They request information be directed to the unit's tip line at 503-823-3473. Computer users might be relieved to hear Microsoft is responding to public demand to reduce e-waste by offering extended security updates for computer systems running Windows 10. Without this step, the Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG, estimates up to 400 million personal computers could be affected when Microsoft ends support in 2025. Shantaya Hudson has more in North Carolina.
Tech giant Microsoft has responded to concerns about the environmental impact of discontinuing support for Windows 10 by offering extended security updates. The move is expected to help states like North Carolina avoid a massive increase in electronic waste as people ditch their old PCs for newer models. The decision comes in response to more than 20,000 petition signatures collected by the Public Interest Research Group. Lucas Gutterman with PIRG says when support for Windows 10 is set to end in 2025, up to 400 million devices could face obsolescence.
And that means that people either need to dispose of those PCs and replace them and buy a new one, or they'll be left unsecure against potential attacks from folks that are exploiting that older operating system.
Gutterman says the extended security update program set to begin in 2025 will come with additional costs for individuals, schools, and businesses. It's estimated about 50,000 tons of computer equipment is already discarded in North Carolina each year, along with more than 30,000 tons of television sets. Gutterman points out this move by Microsoft represents a step in the right direction to reduce the environmental impact of outdated technology. However, he believes further measures should be taken to address the issues such as automatically extending support.
It's not just Microsoft, it's not just Google, it's not just Apple. The entire industry really needs to have things that are designed to last. And it does seem like they are listening to folks that stand together and ask them to do that.
According to PIRG, the manufacturing of these devices has already resulted in about 46 million tons of climate pollution, or the equivalent of adding 9 million cars on the road for a year. For North Carolina News Service, I'm Shantia Hudson.
A new COVID variant is now dominant in Oregon, according to the State Health Authority. JN1 is an Omicron subvariant, which was initially detected in August. That variant reached a 58% share in mid-December, according to recently sequenced biospecimens. Now it is likely responsible for as many as two-thirds of U.S. COVID cases. And state officials expect that those figures will continue rising. The Oregon Health Authority, or OHA, said, quote, "It's pretty different from the variants that we've been seeing lately. And so, possibly, it's evading some of the immunity that we had," end quote. Oregon has also recently experienced more cases in general and more hospitalizations. There's no firm evidence JN1 is responsible, but the timing makes that likely. The OHA added, quote, "The fact that this strain is spreading so much more rapidly means that we're more likely to get it and possibly get severe disease from it," end quote. JN1 has around 30 genetic differences versus the XBB strain common in Oregon. Variants within that family frequently have just one or two differences. Since the current monovalent booster vaccine is based on XBB, that may weaken immunity. However, experts say getting vaccinated is still the public's best option to protect against COVID. Immunity is based on exposure to several of the previous variants, and the vaccine probably still protects against severe complications. There's no evidence that JN1 causes more severe disease or is more likely to be associated with fatalities. The World Health Organization has declared it a variant of interest, but says it poses a low additional threat to public health. Government and nonprofit workers can get student loan debt canceled through a public service program. But with so many proposals and confusion over student loans in recent years, many don't know they're eligible or what rules have changed, especially under what's called the income-driven repayment plan. Roz Brown has more on the story.
Public service is its own reward for many, but as tuition costs soar, it's also an effective tool to reduce college loans. The Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program rewards people who work for the government or a nonprofit. It was created by President George W. Bush in 2007 and has been expanded by the Biden administration. Texas State University professor William Chittenden says what's different now is that many also qualify for what's called the income-driven repayment plan.
Your student loan payments are going to be based on your disposable income, which will change for family size. And the idea is that it'll never be more than 5 to 10% or so of your disposable income.
After working with an eligible employer for 10 years and making 120 qualifying monthly payments on debt, students have the remaining debt forgiven. He says loan forgiveness programs are especially important for those who enter fields that don't necessarily pay high wages, such as teaching, firefighting, nursing, and social work. For many, the cost of higher education has become unmanageable, primarily because state legislatures contribute less in their budgets to public education than they used to. That leaves the bulk of financing up to students and parents, who scramble to find both private and government help. Chittenden suggests the entire student loan process could use an overhaul.
The system's not set up real well in that we're asking 18-year-olds to make these very important decisions that are going to impact their finances for literally the rest of their life without really giving them the tools to be able to do that.
A nearly four-year pause on federal student loan interest ended in 2023 when the pandemic was deemed officially over. President Biden proposed a comprehensive student loan forgiveness program, but it was ruled unconstitutional by the U.S. Supreme Court. For Texas News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be very cold, with strong winds and an overnight low of 18 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be snowy and windy. A winter storm warning is in effect from 7 a.m. Saturday to 10 p.m. that evening. Today in history, in 1998, 19 European nations agreed to forbid human cloning. The quote of the day is from philosopher Edmund Burke, who was born this day in 1729. He said, "Whenever a separation is made between liberty and justice, neither, in my opinion, is safe." The Navajo Nation community is meeting about an oil spill near Shiprock. They're calling for independent oversight of cleanup efforts. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. At a Shiprock chapter meeting on the Navajo Nation this week, community members put forward a resolution that calls for independent oversight of cleanup efforts after an oil spill north of Shiprock, New Mexico. Chris Clements with KSJD has more.
Residents held a meeting on Saturday to discuss the ramifications of the spill and the community-drafted resolution, which also requests an investigation into the cause of the incident by both the U.S. EPA and the New Mexico Environment Department. Last month, a pipeline that transports crude oil from New Mexico to Aneth, Utah, was breached by a grading truck on agricultural land. The pipeline is operated by a subsidiary of Navajo Nation Oil and Gas, which is a tribal enterprise. Beverly Maxwell and other Navajo residents who live near the spill are frustrated with what they describe as a lack of communication from local and national tribal authorities about details of the still ongoing cleanup.
You know, as I look out the window now, there goes a dump truck full of contaminated soil going to drop it off at the staging area of that big old contamination pile. And it's not done.
A press release on December 20th from the Office of the President of the Navajo Nation said that the spill was quickly contained, and that out of the 1,500 barrels of oil spilled, 800 have been recovered, while 700 have soaked into the soil along the flow path. I'm Chris Clements.
Members of the Biden administration are urging Congress to fully fund the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children, or WIC, for 2024. WIC is an important program for American Indians and Alaska Natives. KMBA's Jill Freitas reports.
WIC provides food, health care, and resources, assisting more than 6 million people across the country, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Officials are concerned a funding shortfall puts at risk nutrition security for women, infants, and children. During a press conference Thursday, Director of the White House Domestic Policy Council, Neera Tanden, says there will be consequences if WIC is not funded this year.
If congressional Republicans pass a budget without fully funding WIC, states will have no choice but to cut the number of people they serve. States would be forced to implement waiting lists or take other devastating measures. 2 million parents and young children could be turned away from WIC by September 2024 if Congress fails to provide full funding. That is simply unacceptable. Depriving eligible families of WIC would worsen hunger and hardship. No one deserves that, particularly our children.
Tom Vilsack is the secretary of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He says WIC participants are up 400,000 from a year ago. He says if Congress doesn't provide funding, participants would be put on a wait list, and the repercussions of a funding shortfall would be catastrophic.
Under program rules, waiting lists would first be implemented for non-breastfeeding postpartum women. And if that weren't enough, next would be for children ages 1 to 5 years old who don't have higher risk medical issues. If that doesn't satisfy the shortfall, then the next category are pregnant and breastfeeding women and infants who do not have higher risk medical issues. But given the size of the funding shortfall, it's likely that waiting lists would stretch across all, and let me emphasize, all participating categories, affecting both new applicants and mothers, babies, and young children enrolled in the program who are up for renewal of benefits.
The budget deadline is next week. The administration and a group of lawmakers are calling for an additional $1.4 billion in federal funding for the program. I'm Jill Freitas.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
States have a large pot of money to spend on transportation. A new analysis of how states are using those funds ranks Oregon fourth in the nation. Eric Tegetoff has more on the story.
Oregon ranks in the top five in a new report measuring how states spend on transportation. With the passage of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act and Inflation Reduction Act, John Bailey with the Natural Resources Defense Council says transportation funds roughly doubled. His organization has evaluated how states are using that money and ranks Oregon fourth in the report. He says while the federal government writes the check, states have a lot of flexibility in how they can spend the money.
Congress has said to states, you can go be innovative and be creative about how you use this. You do not have to use this only for road construction. And so Oregon uses a relatively high percentage of that money to support fixing bridges, funding transit, and safer walking and biking.
Bailey says Oregon also passed clean car and truck rules. The NRDC used 22 metrics for the analysis, including measures for states planning for climate and equity concerns. Transportation is the largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the country. Bailey says transportation policy is critical for rural areas, too.
Transit plays a very important role in getting people to work and getting people to school. I think there's a stereotype that that's strictly an urban thing, but that's really not the case. Rural transit plays an integral role in the transportation system in states all across the country.
Bailey notes that the transportation funding will be renewed in 2026, but likely not at the current levels.
So this is a unique time period to take advantage of it. It probably won't happen again for another generation.
California, Massachusetts, and Vermont are the only states to rank higher than Oregon for doing the most to improve equity and climate outcomes with the federal dollars. Washington State rounded out the top five, and Idaho was among the lowest-ranked states at 44th. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
Self-driving vehicles are advancing, mainly in big cities. But some researchers see autonomous vehicles as a chance to remove transportation barriers in rural areas, especially for older adults and people with disabilities. Mike Moen has more in Minnesota.
Organizers behind a Minnesota project predict self-driving vehicles will be a ticket out of isolation for rural residents living with disabilities that limit them from getting around town. Grand Rapids resident Myrna Peterson, who has quadriplegia, helped attract government funding to bring five self-driving vans to her community. Reporting from KFF Health News says these vans always have a person in the driver's seat poised to take over in complicated situations. But with computers in control the rest of the time, the operator can focus more on the passengers they're transporting. Peterson says the free service allows her to limit the miles she puts on her wheelchair.
It keeps me safe on the streets, and it literally gets me off the streets in inclement weather.
Peterson says Minnesota's Autonomous Rural Transit Initiative, known as Go Marty, makes life more enjoyable and independent. But fully independent vehicles remain far from everyday options as the auto industry struggles to perfect the technology. Minnesota officials say so far the self-driving vans haven't caused any accidents, but they have been rear-ended by human drivers a few times. The vans for these programs are outfitted by May Mobility. Site manager John Deggy says they've provided more than 6,000 rides and the feedback has been positive.
Almost 90% of the people riding are repeat riders too, so that tells us that once people do try the service that they, you know, are liking it and they're able to get to where they're going.
The vans include cameras, radar, GPS, and laser sensors. Deggy notes the computer systems monitor their surroundings and learn from the situations they encounter. The robot drivers can get stymied by roundabouts. And researchers say for now, such services probably will need to run on predetermined routes, limiting on-demand rides. Rural experiments have been set up in a few other states, including Iowa and Ohio. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection. This story was produced with original reporting from Tony Lays for KFF Health News.
Climate change is affecting air travel. One form of severe turbulence has increased by more than 50% over the North Atlantic during the past 40 years. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on this story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Flying a plane through windy, stormy conditions can cause a dangerous, turbulent ride. But a clear blue sky does not guarantee smooth cruising.
Clear air turbulence is completely invisible, as its name suggests, so it's nothing to do with flying through a storm. It comes out of the blue, often without warning.
And Paul Williams, a professor of atmospheric science at the University of Reading in the UK, says it's getting more common. He explains that clear air turbulence is caused by instability in the jet stream, which is increasing as the atmosphere warms. In a recent study, his team found that over the past 40 years, severe clear air turbulence over the North Atlantic increased by more than 50%. Scientists expect that this type of turbulence will grow even more common as global warming continues. Williams says people who fly do not need to be scared, but they should take precautions to stay safe.
It's really, really, really rare for someone seatbelted to be injured in a turbulence encounter. It almost never happens.
So whether the seatbelt sign is on or off, Williams recommends that travelers buckle up as flying gets bumpier in a warming world. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, January 12, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Josh Salem. Their producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Catherine Carley, Mike Moen, Roz Brown, Shantaya Hudson, Eric Tegetoff, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of the Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
You get radio. Coupon.
Hi there, this is Ann Feeney, and you are listening to listener-supported community radio, KVU FM in Portland.
Tune in to KBOO on Monday, January 15th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. for a special live remote broadcast of Keep Alive the Dream. Keep Alive the Dream is an annual celebration of the life and legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This year's event includes guest speakers and musical performances from the MLK All-Star Band, Eli Hardy, and more. Again, there's a special live broadcast of Keep Alive the Dream this upcoming January 15th from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO, Portland.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, the journalists at Yahoo Finance tell us that a Connecticut McDonald's charging $18 for a combo meal has sparked a nationwide debate on rising prices in the fast food industry. The outrage, readers are told, is partly attributed to a recent rise in the minimum wage. Spoiler, we never hear about any other parts attributed. Businesses like McDonald's, the story goes, quote, have already raised their prices in anticipation of the wage hike, close quote. Were there any other responses available to them? Don't ask. We're moving on to how it isn't just that poor working Joes will have to pay more for a Big Mac, but also that there will be layoffs of fast food employees. We meet